A look inside Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, home of the 2018 NFL Scouting Combine. Across the street at the Indiana Convention Center, a busy day inside the media center. Jaguars.com Live continues. J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, Judy Batista from NFL.com. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me.
What a day. Here we are at the Combine again. What number is this for you?
Oh, boy.
Or should I have asked? I'm
yeah.
Sorry. I was a little personal.
Boy,
sorry.
I don't know. It's been a lot. I can tell you, I remember when you used to just be able to pick off players and coaches like in the hallway when
yeah.
it was really
Plaza,
casual.
Right, before
it became this.
Rules and regulations yeah. now and credentials and access
right.
and
non-access. So you predate press conferences.
I remember
when
there were
conferences. No press conferences here. And
yeah.
Like I say, you were here basically to try to talk to one or two GMs.
Yeah, and the agents, you would just hang out in the lobby of the hotel. And, I mean, the best example of this was the year Peyton Manning was coming out into the NFL. And literally, Tom Condon walked around the lobby and said, "Does anybody need to talk to Peyton Manning?" imagine what that would be like right now.
It's
right?
pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Right? And from year to year, this thing has a different feel depending on the prospects coming out and the big position groups. If it's a big quarterback year, then there's a lot of interest in the yeah. scouting combine, and especially the media roast stuff. How does this year compare to some of the years like that so far?
Yeah, I think when there's quarterbacks at the top of the draft, especially this year where there's a bunch of quarterbacks who are probably going to be at the top of the draft, there's a lot more juice to the combine and the run-up to the draft. It's a little bit harder to generate that kind of energy when it's nothing against defensive backs or linebackers.
Or long snappers.
When it's quarterbacks and when you have a bunch of teams at the very top of the draft that need quarterbacks, as they usually do if they're at the top of the draft, you know, it's a little bit more intriguing. And this group is particularly interesting. The word everybody seems to use is, like, this is an eclectic group. This is a really interesting group. And I'm like, this sort of sounds like a backhanded compliment, but okay. But this is a really interesting group because there's questions about each one of them.
Is your sense that there's going to be a sorting out process before the draft takes place? Or is this going to be a situation where on the night of the draft we don't know?
No, I think we'll know. I think we'll know a lot more once we see how free agency shakes out and we see certainly where Kirk Cousins goes, obviously, but even, you know, other people after that, like whoever comes loose in free agency on the quarterback side and where they might go. You know, the New York Jets, I live in New York, so that's an example. I mean, they pick six and they have to get a quarterback at some point. Do they get one in free agency or do they wait for the draft? So I think we'll know a lot more once the first few days of free agency
and then
are
with
over.
So many guys up top, is there a chance for one of these guys, when I say these guys, I mean the top four, any of those guys to have a big slide, or there are too many teams that need that most of them will get taken within 10, 11-ish?
Yeah, I mean, you can never say never because there's still 2 months to go before we get there, and God knows
sure.
they're all capable of making mistakes off the field. I hate to say it. I hope it doesn't happen, but, you know, it happens sometimes.
So is Shatter.
Yeah, so... I guess it's possible, but there's a lot of teams at the top that need quarterbacks. And so even if one slips, you know, if let's just say, for example, that the Giants, who are picking number two, and I think we all expect or have to have a quarterback in play, mm-hmm. that has to be in their thought process. Let's say they don't take a quarterback. I think, you know, the next few teams
right.
snap them up. You know, I mean, the Broncos are in there. The Jets are in there. Everybody needs a quarterback.
That's the interesting part. You mentioned just a moment ago the interesting part of this whole calendar is that we're talking about all this right now, all the guys that are here, but in 2 weeks the whole story could change.
Yeah, free agency is going to change, especially because this is the rare year where you have accomplished quarterbacks who are free agents. That just doesn't happen
that's right.
all that often. It reshapes everything. I mean, you know, the year Peyton Manning was a free agent, extremely rare, right? But that reshaped everything. Mm-hmm. The Broncos needed a quarterback. They got Peyton Manning. Okay, so that reshuffled what everybody, you know, could assume who would be available. That's what's going to happen this year. I mean, if, you know, it seems like the consensus is building that it'll be the Vikings that land Kirk Cousins. They want him.
It's incredible to think about all the quarterbacks it's they've had there.
Kind
know?
Of frightening, the idea of the Vikings adding a player like that. But let's say somehow, you know, the Jets get him. They're interested. Well, that changes everything,
right.
you know, so it's yeah, a lot is going to change in the next few weeks. And then inevitably, you know, this as you get closer and closer to the draft, quarterbacks always, even if there's significant questions about them, quarterbacks mm-hmm. always get pushed up. It happens every year. you remember when Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota were both coming out, people were questioning Mariota. Sure. Could he adjust to the NFL? How long would it take? Whatever. By the time draft night started, he was up and he was the number 2 pick.
Right. He eventually got pushed up to
they all get pushed up.
Ahead of a quarterback. Where would Cousins go if he was in the draft?
Wow. That's
would he be
good
number
question.
One overall?
Wow. Would he be number 1 overall? I don't know about that. If you take what he was in college.
Right. To me, that's what makes this intriguing.
Yeah.
Is
I don't
you
know. Could you project?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, even the Redskins who took him couldn't project, right? Because
right.
they took RG3 way ahead of him. So, you know, I mean, knowing what we know now, obviously
sure.
he'd go high. I guess he'd probably, you know, there's still evaluators. I was talking to Charlie Casterly about this today. He, for example, he thinks Cousins is a really good
right.
quarterback, but is he a great quarterback?
Right.
That's a big question.
Well, that's the intriguing
we don't
thing.
Know.
You're talking about a guy who
right.
might be on somebody's cap for $28, $29 million, and yet you're not even sure if he'd be the number one
right.
pick.
No.
So that's what quarterback does to you. It sort
right.
of blows up your evaluating process and drives you nuts.
Right.
So
right.
speaking of being driven nuts, you've been to Jacksonville often in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Nice segue.
That was a good segue.
John Osher, everybody.
Yeah.
It really didn't work.
No,
but,
right.
So, but
I think you just said I was nuts for going to Jacksonville, but we'll go
no,
right
I meant,
past that.
No, we were nuts.
Oh,
we're crazy
okay.
nuts for having you there. We talked last owners' meetings, and you had just done a story on Tom Coughlin, and then you were back in for, I believe it was training camp. We were going to have you on, and I missed you. I remember we messaged back and forth, and I said, hey, we'll catch you next time. And your message back to me was, I really hope Doug and Tom do well. I really hope the team does well. I like Doug and Tom.
Yeah.
And I'll admit, when you first messaged me that back, I said, well, there's no chance. because this was in the middle
How
of August.
How smart do I look?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and I guess, did you expect this team to have this kind of a season?
Well,
and what was your reaction as you saw it?
Yeah, I mean, no. Let's be clear. I mean, I thought they could turn it around.
Right.
I thought Tom and Doug certainly were capable of turning it around. Did I think they were going to turn it around to this degree and this fast? No. I mean, of course not. But certainly as the season developed, first of all, there were other things happening in the division that opened the door,
sure.
right? I mean, when Deshaun Watson went down, when Andrew Luck was out, that obviously
right.
opens the door to everything. Then Deshaun Watson gets hurt, and you're like, okay. And in the meantime, the defense was playing so great mm-hmm. that you'd think like, maybe something can happen here. I do remember I was talking to Dan Edwards, PR maven at the Jaguars, at training camp, and I said like, you know, this division is open
right.
every year. You know, it's wide open. It's ever since Peyton left it, it's been wide open. I said so, and they had lost so many games the previous season. You know, mm-hmm. at the end of the game by just a few points. So if they could just flip a few of those, you know, maybe you go 8-8, maybe somehow you go 9-7, that could win the division.
Sure.
I mean, did I think they would have the kind of season, you know, going to the AFC Championship game and, you know, almost winning it? I can't say I thought it was going to happen that fast. It
well,
was impressive.
The trick now, the window's open for the team. I
sure.
mean, the defense is set up for the next couple of years. Is it sustainable? Can they take advantage of the window open? That's the big question right now.
I think it's sustainable if they're convinced that Bortles is going to improve. Like, they seem sold on what they saw in the last, you know, month or so mm-hmm. of the season, that is going to be an upward trajectory. I think if that pans out, then, yeah, it's sustainable. Sure, the defense is phenomenal. Leonard Fournette is phenomenal and will only get better. You know, you're going to get the receiver back, hopefully. That'll help. Knock on wood.
Right.
You know, so if Bortles can keep inching upward, I think it's certainly sustainable. Because, again, look, Deshaun Watson's going to come back, and it looks like he's going to be a great player.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Andrew Luck comes back. We know he's a great player. Obviously, the Titans are already a playoff-caliber team. I think the division gets a lot tougher. I don't think this is going to be the kind of division it's been, you know, for so many years.
Tough division and a first-place schedule to go with,
yeah,
it too.
The schedule gets a lot tougher, obviously, when you're a successful team. But I certainly think it's sustainable because I do think they brought in last year exactly what, you know, everybody expected them to bring in, which was discipline, focus, a real plan for how to win. I will say this. when they re-signed Blake Bortles, my thought was, now you got to show that you have confidence in Blake Bortles, right? You can't do what you did in the AFC Championship game, which was maybe lose a little confidence and take your foot off the gas. You got to go. Now you've decided you're going to go with him, go with him.
And I know you've written about Tom a lot over the years, and I talked to him last offseason. a neat story for him to, I guess, come back and be so instrumental, obviously, in the rebirth of the franchise. He doesn't talk about it a whole lot.
It means a ton to him.
It's got to mean a ton to him.
It means a ton to him. I talked to him at training camp last year about what it means to him to come back and try to help the Jaguars, you know, a renaissance there. And it means a great deal to him. You know, he never, first of all, you know, he never sold his house there. I mean, he kept the J Fund headquartered there. It means a lot to him to help the Jaguars, you know, get back to prominence. You know, I it's special for him.
Well, and you laugh. What's your best Tom story?
Oh, dear God.
That's the best Tom story.
Let's think. The Giants, when he was at the Giants, it was coming off the lockout. So remember, there was no off-season workout. Like, the lockout ended, they went right to training camp. And the Giants had a really weird training camp that year. There were a lot of injuries. O.C. Umanure was conducting this bizarre sort of holdout where he was present at practices but not practicing. So he was riding an exercise bike off the side day after day. It was like the most bizarre scene. You can imagine how much he loved that. And I asked him one day, are you losing sleep over any of this? The, you know, like all these injuries. He goes, he looks at me in front of the whole group. This is in a press conference. He goes, Judy, I don't sleep. I'm like, got it. Sorry.
Fair point.
Having said that, they won the Super Bowl that year, it all worked out.
It all worked out in the end. A couple of days ago at NFL.com, you had a story about the catch rule and the competition committee reviewing that here a couple of days before the combine. So I'll ask you two ways here. First, what's a catch? Second, what will a catch be after this is all said?
Yeah, well, if you remember, during Super Bowl week, Roger Goodell sort of laid it in the competition committee's lap and said, I want something done with the catch rule. So I think what they have come to is they're going to look at eliminating the part of the catch rule about going to the ground, right? So this is the part where you have to have the ball and you go to the ground and you crash into the ground and you still have to be holding the ball in that same sort of position. It can't be movement, can't be space. This is sort of what would be like the Dez Bryant, the non-catch. Right. This would have been a catch, right? This year, the Jesse James
Steelers
Patriots, TD that was overturned against the Patriots, that would have stood as a TD. They think that will clarify it. Although, listen, I've talked
but
to...
But they put that in trying to get objective or...
A little more definitive.
Listen, I've talked to people. I happened to talk to Bengals coach Marvin Lewis today in the hotel lobby. He used to be on the competition committee, and he thinks the rule is fine as is.
Right.
He thinks it is sort of an education issue that it's incumbent on the league to tell fans and media and players and coaches give a better, clear explanation for what the rule is. One of the problems they have with the catch rule is if you tinker with it too much and you talk about you got to have 2 feet down and make a football move and all that, that opens up the fact that you might have to change rules on defenseless receiver, protections for defenseless receiver. They don't want to do that because that's a player safety issue. They don't want to do anything that would pull back protections for players. So, you know, writing a rule that it's hard to write a rule that doesn't have unintended consequences. That's what they look at this every year.
Right.
They try to clean it up. This is sort of what they've come up with this year. We'll see if it helps. The other point that's worth making is, like, this is a handful of plays a year that this is an issue. It just so happens they're the most controversial ones. They're the ones we all talk about.
Key times, sure.
But that's where it seems to be going on the catch rule.
And when I was with the Colts, Bill Polian and Tony Dungy were both on the committee at the time. And they always used to tell me the competition committee is trying to get things out that bring judgment into
it. That's right. They want to eliminate as much gray area as they can.
Taking that part out of the rule is going to bring some judgment back into it, which is counter to what they want to do. So that's part of why it's so difficult for them to find a rule in this, because it's an impossible rule to legislate perfectly. It has been since they brought the forward pass into it.
The other thing that's worth remembering, and I'm not trying to make excuses for the officials, but they are making these calls in real time with athletes with bananas ability, right? They are playing at extreme speed. They're making calls in real time that are almost always accurate when they replay it, when they review it. We all have the benefit of watching it in super slow-mo, super high def. You can see the slightest incremental movement. The fact that they get as many calls right as they do is probably, you know, what we should be talking about a lot more than the ones that, you know, they don't get right.
I have one more question if you have time. Interference. Is it going to change?
Defensive pass interference. I think it's a long shot that that will change. They spent a lot of time in the competition committee talking about it because there are certainly members of the committee who feel like having it be a spot foul, you know, 40, 50-yard penalty sometimes, you know, that's a game-altering play.
Right.
Sometimes, as one member said, like, sometimes that's a season-altering play, depending on when it happens. But I don't think there's enough momentum and enough support to get it changed to just the 15-yard penalty right now.
Do you see it eventually happening, or is this something that they're just going to have to
I think it could happen, except, you know, but coaches say, like, if you you know, if you do that, if it's just a 15-yard penalty, like, the coaches will coach their players.
Sure,
you know,
tackle the guy.
Right, just tackle the guy. Like, we'll take the 15 yards. That's nothing. You know, so if it's a 50-yard penalty, that's a, you know, that's a different story. You know, I don't know if that will ever get through, but there's they spent a lot of time talking about it.
Something that it's hard for me to envision. The league legislating something that might take away big plays, and that might take away. You know.
I think this goes to that. You know, they care very much about scoring.
Right.
Scoring was down slightly this year for the first time in a very long time, which is not a trend they want to see continue. To that end, you're going to see an emphasis. It's not a rule change, but it'll be a point of emphasis for officiating on calling more illegal contact. They feel like there's a lot more hand fighting going on. They actually did this. It was when Bill Polian was on the competition committee. You remember that playoff game where the Patriots mauled Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne, and Polian sort of stood on a table and said, we need to enforce illegal contact. And they did. They feel like it's slid back a little bit.
Which is always the trend.
Right.
Legislate, educate, and then it slides.
Right. And so it's slid a little bit, especially the Seahawks defenders, defensive backs are very aggressive. So they feel like that's there's too much hand fighting back in the game. So I think we're going to see a point of emphasis for officials to call more illegal contact.
Final thought here. Judy Batista with us, NFL Media. Who are you most excited to see this week at the Combine?
The quarterbacks. I mean, I want to see. Now, Sam Darnold, who is right now I think the presumptive number one pick, is not going to do anything here. He's not throwing. Nothing. But I'm interested to see Josh Rosen and all the rest, Baker Mayfield. I mean, you know, I want to see what these guys can do.
Now, is that going to be your coverage area for the next couple of months? All quarterbacks all the time?
I probably. I mean, let's be honest. Yes.
There are worse things to cover as the draft comes up.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost always about the quarterbacks, I think, in the end.
Fantastic. Judy, as always.
Great to be here, guys.
Judy Batista joining us. NFL.com. Check her work out. And we'll see you next time on Jaguars.com Live.